Okay, well, let's see here. Am I got anything wrong? You know, I don't know that I apologize for you or apologize to you, or do I just explain things, but this has been a long study. I mean, it's been a long one for me. You know, I don't mind it in the sense that I learn a lot when I study deeply, but also can kind of wear on people after a while. So I don't know how this study is sitting with you, but and I can't really say, well, we're going to be done with it now, and then because we got the kingdom to talk about, you know, lots of stuff that, you know, is part of the Abrahamic covenant as it works out that we should be interested in. And the kingdom is actually in the New Jerusalem, is the heaven where we're going to go, so we should have some interest in it. And there's going to have to be some speculation because we don't know a lot. So we kind of read between the lines. And knowing that whatever it is, we won't be disappointed in. But anyway, I'm sort of thinking that this little timeline study is winding to an end. I had a couple of weeks on it, so this is the third week. And I thought, well, I need to do some more things next week yet, especially if there are questions. So we're getting kind of towards the end of things on that particular question. But of course, we're not done with the issue of the kingdom and the eternal, our eternal abode where we're going to live for eternity. And so anyway, I just want to mention to you that I'm aware of the dragging of this out. But on the other hand, there's so many things that don't get said in every lesson that I feel a little frustrated with that too. So that's why it kind of keeps on going. And then I've said things 2 months ago that bears repeating that we forgot, and then it's germane to it. So I guess overall, if I could say this, this overall has been one of the most satisfying studies I've ever done, in that it's taken, it's forced me to take what the scripture says alone and stick with it, because there's not much help from the outside world or even the Christian world to come to this conclusion and take the other view. And so it's been an opportunity for me to test my skills, so to speak, my ability to sort out things that are biblical and things that are tradition. And that's not easy to do, because things that are traditional in our mind, they just live there. You know, they just don't go away. You just, somebody comes up and you say, well, that's not right. You don't change your mind, you know, you just don't. You have to be convinced by some other way. So I have in the bottom here, in any case, when you're done with this study, you will be confirming your convictions. You'll either be stuck more firmly with what you believe is right, that's different than what I believe, or you come to a position to believe what I believe, and that's fine. You believe what you want to believe. So I won't leave you untouched. I mean, a study like this doesn't do that. You have to decide along the way, does this make sense or does it not make sense? And when you decide it makes sense, whatever it is, you'll be more confirmed in that. So that's an explanation more than an apology, because apology is sort of like, I feel it's getting kind of long, but I can't do anything about it, I guess, at least to be fair to the question. So we maybe have more questions, next loose ends. I mean, I think of things that need to be said, and again, we've said it before, and it's something that needs to be said again. So we'll see what we do next week, but I can't think we're getting close to the end of this timeline question. So as I said, we produce these lessons weekly. You're studying with me, and do the back and forward movement. You gotta stick with me. It isn't a scholarly presentation where it's already been figured out ahead of time, and now it's gonna be scholarly presented to the group. It's not that kind of thing. You've been with me on this discovery. So we are dealing with matters that few do, and I would be grateful for others to join. And that's one of the things I'd like to do, is go and list some of the people that do agree with this, because there's no reason or general sense to agree with it. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm just off the podium by myself. I feel that way, but I'm not really, but they're not really writing a lot to help with life either. So too often the same arguments, this is what I've seen in literature, the same arguments are repeated with no clarification or more movement. And so we're also aware of our nearly solo voyage. It is. But if it produced some clarity, I'd say it's pertinent. Well, I'm not going to spend time on this because you know that's the timeline. I have it in case it needs to be shown. But just to let you know that the popular view is often shown in, I'd say popular view is always shown in charts that people produce. This is one by Tim LaHaye, actually Tom Ice probably produced it, charting the end times. We sell it. I have a copy of it. It's a good thing to have. It's in living color and all that stuff. Anyway, I looked into the chart, and I had a feeling a little bit about the charts, having paged through the book a number of times, that it seems like it doesn't redevelop the fire at the end of the kingdom and destroy that destroys the earth. You know, that's the traditional view. Right, so I looked at the chart and reminded myself that that's really where it is. So so it seems to me like there is a lack of consistent emphasis on how the fire judgment, that is at the end of the kingdom, is presented. And the comeback's, well, it's not really a big deal. Oh, yes, it is a big deal. If the earth that God created is going to be destroyed, that's a big deal. And it doesn't make the chart. You know, that's what bothered me a little bit. So I'm thinking a couple of things. If people really don't really, really, really believe it, and they put it there because everybody else does, or something, I don't know. So I noticed this chart had nothing to do, except it's a chart and shows the kingdom here. We have the kingdom, tribulation, and the millennium, but here there's no fire here. That's where it should be. It's after the millennium, before the eternal state. That's where the fire should be. It should be on the chart. Everything else important is on that chart. Okay, let's do another one.
No.
They just have a crash at the end sometime, and not in their lifetime, surely.
So this should be kind of a family discussion.
Yeah, this whole thing is family discussion because, the Amillennialists, they just see a judgment at the end. We call it the Great White Throne Judgment, supposedly we have, they have, that would match. And then the world is destroyed.
So they would consider the world gets destroyed from now.
Yeah, this world we sit in now gets destroyed, then we have heaven, and it's in another place. That's the millennial view. Mm-hmm. And some millennialists don't like that anymore, and they've changed their view. They're trying to change, and the outcomes are others. Okay, so here's another chart, the Babylon and history. Okay, it seems, again, there seems to be a lack of consistent emphasis on how fire judgment is represented, and I repeat again, it is not a minor issue. So again, we should have some big conflagration. That's the word for it. This the conflagration, with an article, the conflagration occurs there. And I said, why don't we put it there? I mean, it's a major event. I say again, a huge event. But somehow it's not a huge event. So I'm wondering whether these people, I'm not being negative here, but that they don't really believe it, understand it, or else they put it on the chart. But they have some charts, they put it on. So here is another one, and this is one where they try to deal with this interval period. We have the 75-day martyr. This is the tribulation here. And then we have, the millennium, and then the judgment. And this would be where the fire would occur. I guess this thing here looks like it kind of must be what it is, a lightning strike. Which, that's pretty good, because something does happen there. And then we have the new heavens and the earth, which, you know, I think it should be here. But, so again, it's not a major issue, and it doesn't make the chart. But I did find it on a chart, this one. This is their fold-out, you know, their flagship chart for the whole book. Is in the front, section layout, and there it is. So in the fold-out chart of the book, the main chart, the fire judgment, is placed at the traditional point, which is, all the stuff underneath you can't see, but here it is. Here's eternity, and this is the kingdom in here, the nation of judge in chapter 25. So the kingdom is here, so here is the judgment. And so they have it on this chart. And they use the passage from 2 Peter 3:7 to support this. So, however, the passage in 2 Peter 3:7 has to do with the next destruction of ungodly men. There have been a number of destructions of ungodly men. We've had them at the flood. We will have them again at the end of the tribulation when the second coming occurs. Ungodly men will be removed. And we'll have it again at the end of the millennium where the fire comes down from heaven and consumes them. So we have three destructions of ungodly men. I'm talking like carte blanche destruction. Everyone is removed from earth. All right, so 2 Peter 3:7 has to do with the next destruction. You know, if I would tell you the destruction that's coming, well, you think it's the next one, not the second one, which is at the end of the millennium. So we're going to skip over the one that's at the second coming and go to the one at the end of the millennium. That's how they use it. They make it the one at the end of the millennium is the one that is the one you're facing you now. So I say there's little comfort that the false teachers, which is what Peter writes against, there's little comfort that false teachers, that the false teachers they are dealing with will be destroyed after 1,000 years. You know, it's little comfort. Rather, at the Lord's imminent coming, any time, we believe, they believe, they can find comfort in these very false teachers that are causing them trouble in their church. May not live out their natural lives because the Lord's going to come take care of them. See, that was the hope. Not that a 1,000 years later, then the Lord will come and, you know, and people wouldn't even know who they are anymore because they've all died. And 1,000 years of generations, so they're false teachers. At the end of it all, we're going to be, no, that's not what Peter's saying. Peter's saying, in front of your nose, those teachers, like we'd say today, if you're a false teacher today, you want to watch your T's and Q's because the Lord will come and you will be destroyed. See, that's the hope that's supposed to be over, or whatever word it is. So, but that is the hope. God will take care of them. So rather than the Lord's imminent coming, they can find comfort that these very false teachers may not live out their lives. But that passage then is used for the end of the millennium. See why that bothers me? Okay. You understand what I'm saying? People don't ask questions for a couple of reasons. One, they don't want to ask questions. Second was, they think the question is stupid. Third question is, I don't know enough to ask the question. Fourth reason is, I don't agree with them, and I'm not going to embarrass them to ask them. So, I mean, all kinds of reasons why people don't ask questions. But if you have questions about this, you know, go for it. Okay. So these kind of things have to sink in a little bit, you know. If that's the only verse that you have to put there, that's the best chance to win where this event is. Remember, they're not making a case of this word is. They just say this is what it is. And then throw a verse at it. That's what I look at, how they do this. Okay. Now, we have it, Peter, just in case we don't know the verse of the heart, I'm sure, but this is the verse. But by his word, the present heavens and earth are being preserved, reserved for fire, which is a figure for the tribulation. Don't forget that. Kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men. That happens at the end of the tribulation. The destruction of ungodly men. Okay. All right. So that's what I'm saying. They're putting that clear at the end of the millennium. So I hope I don't get balled up with what I'm going to do for you here. I think I should get balled up myself. Okay, so the question is, to me, it comes down to one question. What do you do with Revelation 20? If you can settle that, you settle the whole argument. There are other arguments, but that's a huge argument. If Revelation is the kingdom, then I will look at some things, what you have to go with that. And then we'll look at also if the Revelation 20 is not the kingdom, it's an interlude, then I'm going to look at that. So we're going to try to make some comparison. That's why I say, making comparisons maybe are sometimes confusing, so even I might get mixed up. So if Revelation 20 is the kingdom, you know, it's a peace between 19 and 21, that is the kingdom where 1,000 years of Satan is found and the end of sinners and sinners, that statement. We find then that the revelation of Jesus Christ, the book has named that, it's the first line in the first verse of the book. But the book does not give a description or even mention the kingdom. So we have Jesus Christ, his centerpiece, doesn't mention the kingdom. Okay, so there's no information about nature, events, quality of life in the kingdom if chapter 20 is chronological. Because the verses that I use that show what the kingdom is like are in the next chapter. Okay? So, chapter 20 doesn't say anything about the kingdom. The trap here is that it says 1,000 years. And when you see 1,000 years, you immediately put 1,000 years in there, and then you read the rest of it like as if it's, I'm going to go through chapter 20 for you and show you it doesn't actually show any movement of time at all. It just gives you information. All right, so if chapter 20 is the kingdom, there's nothing said about the kingdom, about the quality of life, how things work in the kingdom, anything like that at all in the book of the Revelation. Because chapter 21, what it says there about the eternal state cannot be used for describing things in the kingdom because it's not in the kingdom, it's later. So to me, that is another huge thing. Why is there not more said or something said in the book of the Revelation, the Revelation of Jesus Christ, about the kingdom, which is the centerpiece for his life, his ministry, which he'll present to the Father in 1 Corinthians 10, it says, 15, and nothing said about it. And to me, that's the problem. Now, on the other hand, if 20 is chronological, let's see here, if Revelation 20 is chronological, is the kingdom, and I've already kind of said this, but there's no information about the kingdom, but there is in the next chapter, and it corresponds very well with Isaiah's information about the kingdom. So I'm thinking, why is this not the kingdom? What's in 21? Why is this not the kingdom? Okay, that's the next one. Now, if your Revelation 20 is the kingdom, then we start having to force, I think, have to force events in Scripture. For example, we have in Revelation, under the text here, it says, I will show you the wife of the Lamb, the seventh bold angel revealed to the bride, the wife of the Lamb, and it's here, let's see here, if I do this. It's here. Now remember, that's the end of the kingdom. That's the end of the kingdom. And the way they describe this is this, at the end of the kingdom, is where the bride is shown to the world. The seventh angel reveals the bride, the wife of the Lamb. He is announced to the world. After 1,000 years, the seventh bold angel, I don't get the text for this, but you can look it up. It's in Revelation 21. Okay, so this means forcing events like this. It just says forced events to me. Okay. Now, if Revelation 20 is a pause, 19 follows 20, or 21 follows 19, and the 20 is just a section of information, we saw the seventh angel standing there in the tribulation. At the end of the tribulation, and he now announces the wife, the bride, for the marriage feast of the Lamb, which is 1,000 years, and he announces it. It seems like it makes total sense that he would before the kingdom rather than after the kingdom. So I will show you the wife of the Lamb, sevenfold angel who deals the wife of the Lamb, and the Lamb for the 1,000 years to come. Okay? So, we have to do other things. What I'm doing now, I have to force the text. That means forcing events like this. Isaiah 65:17, where it says the new heavens and earth must be cut out of that passage. That 17 verse has to be cut out and put at the end of that chapter. It has to be cut out here so that it doesn't fit there. It fits at the end of the chapter. After all these things we see in the millennium, listen to Isaiah 65, the wolf and the lamb, that's all that's in there. There'll be no mourning, no crying, all that's in there. The new heaven, you got to take it from verse 17 in that position and put it at the end of the chapter. So Isaiah 65:17, the new heavens and earth must be cut and pasted to the end of the chapter. I just say it's out of order. So the Bible put the order in it. And I would say Isaiah 65 is probably the best order we have of all the passages because it's the most complete. All right, so that's a thought. So then we have these four passages. This one here is the main passage. This is Isaiah 65. This is Isaiah 65. Then we have Isaiah 66. It contributes, but it doesn't really help a lot to it. It just mentions how the new heavens and the earth. And then we have the Revelation passage here. And then we have the Peter passage. Remember, we lined those up for you last week. And all these passages, the new heavens and earth, they all need to be lined up. You can't say, well, the one this way, the one this way. The new heavens and earth, there's only one event like that. And then everything stays in place. They don't move anything. They all stay in their place. So I think these four passages are the strongest argument as far as the passage is concerned two, to not to be not to be ignored, or you should consider them, should say. Okay. Now, if Revelation 20 is a kingdom, let's go back to the traditional view, that means we've got to force events like this. 2 Peter 3:10, and the section after that, 2 Peter 3:10-17, 14 it is, must be changed. Must be changed to fit Revelation's assumed order, where chapter 20 is assumed to be the kingdom. So you have to make a couple assumptions to make this work. Peter has to be changed. I'm bothered by that. So this one place where it has to change, and it has to be four. So Peter, 2 Peter 3:10 says, the day of the Lord will come with fire. Now, when the day of the Lord comes, it's usually considered the beginning of the tribulation, or whenever the Lord intervenes into the mankind. I sometimes think it could be the rapture, or considered a rapture. But sure, by the time you get to the tribulation, the day of the Lord is there. So the day of the Lord will come with fire. All right, now, you can't have it that way with the system, the old traditional system. You have to change that to say that the day of the Lord ends with fire. Now, the text doesn't say ends with fire. The text says begins with fire. So we have these choices. Now, see Revelation 20 as a pause with information, smooths out all the text, Isaiah 65:6, 2 Peter, Revelation. Or, Revelation 20 is chronological, then there's no kingdom information in Revelation. The bride is announced after 1,000 years after the marriage feast. Peter must be changed from will come to will end. Isaiah 65:17 must be cut and put at the end of the chapter. Peter's new heaven and earth must be reorganized come after Revelation. That's a lot to chew on. So see Revelation as a pause with information, smooth out all the text. Remember, I still got to do 20 the way I said it. Take that one, if you call that a hiccup, out. Smooth out all the text of Isaiah 65:6, 2 Peter, Revelation. Now the negative of this is, well, seeing Revelation 20 as a pause may take some getting used to. Remember what I said about traditional thinking? Only because it has always been considered the kingdom. And once you're used to that, it's hard to change that. Now, on the positive side, the natural reading of the four passages forces no adjustments and provides a unified conclusion. All four texts line up without any problem. I've shown you that many times. This textual harmony is the most powerful witness in support of the Revelation 20 as a pause. So no kingdom information revelation. That's kind of a problem. I have to admit it's circumstantial. There's really no compelling reason not to have it in there. I mean, you'd almost say, well, it should be there, but that's circumstantial. That's what it is. Now, the wife has announced after 1,000 years marriage feast has passed. The bride announced, that'd be like the bride announced at, say, the 50th anniversary would be bizarre. Also bizarre is that the seventh bold angel is still standing there after 1,000 years. And to me, this is fatal, and I see that this should stop it right there. This would be enough to, you know, rethink the full position. Remember, the kingdom is the marriage feast of the Lamb, is 1,000 years, celebration of the consolation of ages, you might call it, the sole Jewish hope. That's what it is. There's no super heaven for the Jews. So Peter must be changed from will come to will end. Isaiah 65:17 must be cut and put at the end of the chapter. Peter's heaven and new earth must be organized to match Revelation. Now, sort of humorously, I hope there, these liberties would rain down anathemas on us anywhere else to do that to Scripture. So let's look at 20, since that's been such an obstacle in a sense. If we get that straightened out, we'll be okay. So let's just look what it says. Well, verse 1 says, I saw Satan captured and put in prison. He had a sentence of 1,000 years. After 1,000 years, he's released for a short time. That's what it says, verse 1 through 3. And we have for the first time a 1,000-year block of time given in the Bible about this part of the kingdom. That's never, not given anywhere else. And it happened 6 times. So verse 6, 4 through 6 says, the martyrs did not receive the mark of the son during the tribulation. Now, the martyrs did not receive the mark of the beast during the tribulation or resurrected before the 1,000 years, since they rule and reign for 1,000 years. See, that's information. We have 2 pieces of information that we did not know. Didn't move time at all. Just told us something. No time has moved here yet. Even though 1,000 years is talked about, but it didn't move anything. It's just, we're still at verse 1 in time. So far, no hint of time has moved on. The 1,000 years has a beginning and an end. We are told what happens next. We're just, it's information. In verses 7 through 9, we are told that when the 1,000 years are complete, something happens. Or something else happens. Which is Satan is released and many people will be deceived by his appearance. They gather together on the broad plain of the earth to war against the saints surrounding the New Jerusalem. It's not advancing time. It's just telling something that's going to happen. At that time, fire does fall from heaven and devours them, eats them up. It seems like it's kind of one of those things, rabbit trails. It eats them up like there's no ashes left. They're just gone. You don't have all these bodies down laying around in the kingdom, you know, 1,000 years, that kind of just distorted. And God can do that. He's done it with others already. So we have information here. We've got information, but logical time is still in the place of verse 1. We haven't moved anywhere. And that got me thinking about how does the Bible move time along anyway? Well, unless you have, like in the seals, first seal, second seal, third seal, you don't know what time is actually moving by what you're reading. You have the trumpet judgment, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then we have the bowl, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. When we have passages like that, we know time is moving along. But a lot of passages, we just told something about it, that something's going to happen, you don't know whether time's moving or not. So to think that Revelation 20 moves time along, I don't know how you could show that, since it is giving us information we have not had before, and it is nowhere else. So in the next in the chapter, Satan is thrown into hell, the lake of fire, where already the beast and the false prophet are, should have been capitalized, I guess, where from the tribulation times, 1,000 years ago, the sentence of torment will last forever and ever. So again, information. Doesn't move time, it's information. Well, we have been informed of Satan's destiny and the rebellion that he will be raised after 1,000 years. Our vantage point as a reader is still has not changed. Having logically dispensed with Satan and the rebels after 1,000 years, Satan has been judged to hell with the beast and the false prophet. But what about the rest of the people who have populated the earth from Adam's time but were never redeemed, we wonder? And this is before the kingdom starts. What happens to those people? Well, they appear at the great white throne for justice to be sentenced to hell, the lake of fire, for all the dead. There are no living unredeemed left anywhere on earth, nor will their class of being ever be found again. This is the last purging of the earth, third of the full purging of the unbelievers from the earth. So the great white throne is an ultimate judgment seat. In all cases, we're going on to another different subject here. In all cases of all the unregenerate people, all cases of the unregenerate people will be heard here offering their work. They will be judged by their works. They don't have faith, so all that's left is God judging by their works. No one will ever meet the standard of good works to enter heaven. That's already been decided. Their cases will be heard by the most awesome judge. Can't overstate that. God is an awesome God, and he judged in an awesome way. I mean, you just try to get a head around that. So as near, when John expresses this about the great white throne judgment, it seems it's nearly impossible for John to express the nature of this. I call it tribunal. Tribunal, you may think tribunal would be three people. But I don't know whether that's the right word or not, but it is used of judge, of judging a case or a bench. So it could be Father, Son, and Spirit. But the tribunal is not a Bible word. So John's saying this, and I saw a great white throne and him who sat up on it. Now the focus is him who sat up on it. In fact, it is such a great being that John tries to express how great it is by saying from whose presence earth and heaven fled away. No place was found for them. So I say this event is so awesome that the most remarkable created things, heaven and earth personified, and all they contain cannot stand in their created merits before it. Heaven and earth flees away in front of this throne. They can't stand there. Now this is a verse that's used to show that the world is destroyed. That's not what it's saying. It's saying this throne is so awesome. God is so great. that even the things that God himself made can't stand on their own merit. It has to run away. It has to fly away, flee away. The personified heaven and earth, have no choice but to recognize their inferiority and run or flee from it. They cannot stand. Even God's own created vessels cannot stand in this spot. Again, the personified view of that. You understand that. Neither can any of the dead, only ones left, by the way, stand on their merits there. They are all judged and thrown into the lake of fire. But again, we have information about that destiny of the lost. We are still logically in verse 1. If chapter 20 is to represent the kingdom truth, it fails to give us any information about the kingdom itself. But interestingly, we've covered this already, but interestingly, it is found in chapter 21, which parallels Isaiah 65. We believe then that the idea of chapter 20 is exactly as we have proposed, an interlude. 20 is giving us information that anyone would wonder about, heading into a perfected kingdom, a perfect kingdom without the negatives, as open sin is now understood as possible. Here one more passage. Revelation 21:1 states, "And I saw a new heaven and earth, and the first heavens and the first earth passed away, and there was no longer any sea." Now, looking for support, the traditional view, when looking for support that the earth is annihilated, the earth passed away is offered traditionally as the textual proof of a disappearing earth. Well, I believe the correct meaning of this phrase is given in context in 3 verses later. Not the earth, but the things of the earth that passed away. The old term is the cosmos. The old world under sin has passed away, ceased to exist in that state. That's what it's saying. So we have in verse 4:1, which I think explains verse 1, "And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, there will be no longer any death, there will be no longer any mourning, crying, or pain." In Revelation, and Revelation adds, "The first things have passed away." Well, we have in Isaiah 65:19, "And he will rejoice in Jerusalem," this will be the new Jerusalem, "and be glad to my people, and there will no longer be heard in her the voice of weeping and the sound of crying." We have the same kind of language we have in Isaiah 65:19. So literally, the first things of the first earth, the cosmos, has passed away. "When I saw the new heaven and earth, for the first heaven and new earth passed away, and there was longer in the sea." So I think that's the answer to that question again. It seems to me. Now, also consider Revelation 20, verse 9, states, "At the end of 1,000 years, this is the fire part, which is an important verse for the traditional view, "And they came on the broad plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city, and fire came down from heaven and devoured them." Nothing said about anything else. No earth, no vegetation, no cows, it's devoured them, because they're the ones that rebel. So the fire that devours them is not devouring the heavens and the earth. That's reading into it. It doesn't say that. Remember, we've got to limit to what it says. So I believe this verse is used because of the appearance of fire at the end of the 1,000-year section. I call it this low-hanging fruit. Makes it tempting to connect it to the wrongly arranged 2 Peter 3 passage where fire in the tribulation is the destruction tool. Now here's my conclusion. It is hard to impossible to make Revelation 20:11 fled away, and Revelation 21 passed away, and Revelation 20 verse 9 fire devoured them as the convincing evidence of a completely destructed annihilated earth. Those three phrases do it. I don't think so. Now, we have not mentioned the similarity of Ezekiel 40 and Revelation 21, and I also put another one up here, Revelation 22. The water comes from the throne and goes out into the world, and that's also the same figure you have in Isaiah. Ezekiel 47, another comparison of the same thing. Okay, so we've not mentioned some of the Ezekiel 40 and 47, Ezekiel 21 and 22, Revelation 21 22. Both mention a city. Ezekiel's city is in the kingdom. Everybody agrees with that in Ezekiel. So how is it, here's the question, how is it that an event greater than the tribulation, remember it's greater than the tribulation that did destroy the entire earth, greater than the tribulation to which full chapters are devoted, we have Isaiah 24, we have Matthew 24, Isaiah 24, Matthew 24, and the other chapters or large sections of scripture that can be ignored as the big event, but to this, the largest and most physical event in the history of the earth gets three praises. Matthew 24 states, the tribulation is the greatest destruction of all time, past and future. A verse, I think, fatal to the physical view. That verse alone describes it. So, we have then presented then a better solution. Okay, now we're going to deal with this next week, but I just let you know that we're not going to talk about this yet, but the kingdom is said to be flawed. The curse is not completely lifted. And therefore God has destroyed. And we cannot have intimacy with God during the kingdom. So that's, we're going to deal with those next week.